Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
You're listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
This is Paul Hawksby.
And Max Rushton.
And this was our show today, and this is some of the best bits of it. Of course, we talked about Diego Maradona and his sad passing. We spoke to Gary Lineker, who was fascinating on the subject. He played with him, against him, interviewed him, got on very well with him, as you'll discover. And we also spoke to Asif Kapadia, didn't we, as well?
Yeah, film director who directed the Diego Maradona movie, which you should definitely watch after you've listened to this podcast, of course. More important than any of that, we took Cruyff or Binny to the next level, didn't
yeah.
we?
I don't think there's anywhere to go with it now, but maybe there is, maybe there isn't. But Cruyff or Binny, we had a conversation about various things, dinosaurs, and we brought
dinosaurs and Tabasco sauce.
That's right. Yeah, that was it. So here it all is. Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon, Max.
Yeah, good afternoon, Paul. And obviously, there's been so much brilliant stuff written about Diego Maradona in the last sort of 24 hours, hasn't there? And just so many clips of just watching, that goal and watching Barry Davis do it amazingly and watching Brian Butler do it. About I had a video, a goals video, 500 best goals, and I think it was voiced by Michael Caine.
Did it make it in there, the second one? it made the top 500.
It was,
I see,
at number 384.
Yeah,
and it's Brian Butler's commentary, and it was just so amazing. And then there's an Irish commentary which you might have heard, and obviously the one that was commentated in Argentina, and it's so nostalgic. And for someone my age, I don't football. There was no football before Maradona.
How old were you when that game
happened? So I was seven when that game
happened. Seven, wow.
So sentient, not enough to really understand tactics.
Yeah.
Enough to understand that a handball probably isn't the best thing, but not really get it, not really understanding, the implications of it, but appreciating that goal. But it's interesting, isn't it? Because I can't really remember where I was when I watched it, or if I watched it live, because I've seen it so many times. Mm. I watched that game in lockdown on the podcast. We did a few sort of nostalgic games, and we watched that game again. And actually, Argentina was so much better than us.
Yeah.
And he was so good that it actually took away any of that, I'm still angry with Maradona type stuff.
I mean, there was a feeling that England, going into that game, were a better side, but they did have Maradona. And then we'll talk to Gary Lineker about this a little bit later on. And, obviously, that he made that huge difference. The Barry Davis commentary is brilliant, because when Maradona scores that second goal, he has to kind of sum up the way the nation are feeling.
Yeah.
And he does, because he says, you have to say that's brilliant. And it's kind of begrudging.
Yeah.
Although, Barry, I don't think they would have let that get in the way, even if it was against England. If it's a great goal, it's a great goal for Barry. But he does kind of get it, just in his, what, you have to say this, but he's almost saying, like, come on, England fans, that is brilliant. I know it's against us and it's annoying after what happened with the first goal, but that is brilliant.
Yeah.
And I think we all sat there again. Yeah, fair play.
Yeah,
I think so.
And there's an amazing photo of him celebrating with the Argentina fans going wild and the England fans, with a few fingers in the air, not so happy about it. What are your memories then?
Well, I saw him play.
I was very lucky.
You were at that game.
I was at the Aussie ID List testimonial. It was a full house that night. It was a huge turnout. I mean, obviously, I think people knew Maradona was coming, and it was build up to the World Cup, so there was a lot of excitement, and he was a huge player, and there was an expectation that this was going to be a big World Cup for him, and it was a brilliant night. Yeah, and him and Hoddle, it was just this sort of
the
telepathy.
Right?
They played really well. So to see him in the flesh was fantastic. Yeah. And I mean, Ozzy was on breakfast this morning, and obviously those two were pretty close. And he'd come from I didn't know the details, I looked it up today, but he played in Norway in a friendly, and he'd come straight there to England in a build-up before, it was a World Cup warm-up match, and he'd come over to play for Ozzy because he was his friend. And it was just an amazing night. It was, I didn't even remember the score till again. I looked up this, like Clive Allen got the winner. But I just remember him on the ball.
Yeah.
And he was sensational. And we're all saying, oh, I can't wait to watch him in the World Cup. And then Martin Tyler interviewed him afterwards, I think, for Saint and Greavesy. And he said, what did you make of the reception you got from the English football fans? He said, oh, I loved playing in front of them. And we're all thinking, oh, what a great bloke. And then, of course, 2 weeks, about a month later, when we're on the receiving end of it, we felt slightly different, I seem to remember. But it was great to watch him in the flesh.
I looked at his focus on, you know, we'd be doing the Binnie V. Cruyff, and I wondered if and I looked at it, and in his miscellaneous dislikes is one word: injustice, which I thought was amazing,
really?
Wasn't it? He did it like 20.
Hello,
you know, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. But the global reach of Maradona is amazing. You know, I got this message from a guy in Iceland called Carrie, saying, "When and how did you become aware of him? I was born in 1981, and Maradona was the first person I knew about who wasn't a member of my family or in my kindergarten." So that's in Iceland. And then Miguel Delaney in the Independent saying that before the 1990 World Cup opener, some of the Cameroonian players started crying when they saw him in the tunnel because they couldn't believe they were
going to be on the same. And then they beat him. They beat him, of course.
They did, right? Maybe they took more out of Caniggia. I don't know. But I don't know. Matt Dickinson, we're talking to Marcelo More Araujo, who's in Buenos Aires, and will sort of give us an idea of what it's like over there. But I thought this piece in the Times from Matt Dickinson, who's written a book about Maradona, which is coming out soon. He said, to understand the scale and the devotion of Argentina, I went to a gathering of members of the Iglesia Maradoriana, which is the Church of Maradona, formed by his fanatical fans. And Maradona's daughter, Dalma, agreed to go to one of the meetings. Says they were just having this meeting, and then two people got married using El Diego, my dad's autobiography, like it was a Bible, placing their hands on it. You know, it started to get embarrassing when they began to worship me. But, you know, the idea of, like, his reach is just so bizarre.
Well, I mean, he's been treated like a deity today. He's lying in state in the sort of presidential palace, and, you know, people are filing, over a million people have filed past in Buenos Aires.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
Like a little eel, and comes away from trouble. Little squat man comes inside Budger, leads him for dead. Outside Fennec leads him for dead and puts the ball away. And that is why Maradona is the greatest player in the world. He buried the English defence. He picked up that ball 40 yards out. First he left one man for dead. First he went past Saxon. It's a goal of great quality by a player of the greatest quality. It's England 0, Argentina 2.
Brian Butler there with the radio
commentary.
That's
amazing. I think it's so brilliant, that, honestly.
We'll play you the Barry Davis commentary a little bit later on, and the reticence in the voice, knowing that he was speaking to very disconsolate people back home. But you have to say that's brilliant, as he said. Anyway, Andre Villas-Boas just upped the ante. He said, I would like FIFA to retire the number 10 shirt in all competitions for all teams.
Barry on our podcast this morning said we should retire the number 10 from everything.
Well, this is
not just football. Just so, like, get rid of the number 10. So, beyond, so to counting children at school.
Wow.
8, 9, 11, 12.
It's quite restraining, Andre Villas-Boas. Yeah. Joining us now to chat about his meeting with Diego Maradona around the time he made the documentary, brilliant documentary. So, it's available on Channel 4 for you to enjoy. Diego Maradona. Asif Kapadia joins us. Asif, good afternoon.
Hi there. Good afternoon, Paul Matt.
Hi.
You met him at the... I mean, although the film itself doesn't really bring us Maradona in the present day, you did meet him around making this, didn't you?
Yes, I met him quite a few times. This is when he was living in Dubai and he was coaching there. So we're sort of talking 2016, 17, 18, around that time. And I went to his home quite a few times, about three, four times, and went through the process of kind of getting to know him, earning his trust, and then eventually interviewing him. So when you hear his voice in the film, that's from audio interviews that we did with him in Dubai.
Wow. And did you sense that he was like a nice, decent man when you met him, sort of weighed down and held back by the fact that he was also Maradona?
I mean, you know, just meeting with Diego Maradona, you go through lots of different versions of him. You know, the first meeting was the kind of cliche meeting that I've read about and heard lots of other journalists mention, which is you just wait. You wait until he's ready to see you. You fly to the other side of the world, and then today, they said, not today, today's not a good day, try tomorrow. And then you wait for a week and you hardly see him. You see him for 5 minutes and you think that was it. And then you go away and you come back. And then we had another good one where it was just him. There was no entourage, no one around. And we spoke. And we got to know him and he smiled and you think, oh, actually, I like this guy. And then you never really know which one you're going to meet until you're in the room with him, until he descends from the staircase, right? Because he's often asleep until the afternoon. You know, no one tells you that until you're there. Then you realize, you know, he's been asleep until 4 in the afternoon because he was watching Boca Juniors. You know, he's in Dubai, so he's watching Boca in Argentina till like 4 in the morning. So it always depended on the day and the mood he was in. And then if you got him in the right place, he opened up and he actually had a very sweet side to him.
Yeah, that experience you outlined there sounds just like the experience of the Four World Boys when they made In the Hands of the Gods, you know, just difficult to pin down. But when you did, he was charming. So what I'm interested to know what he made of the film. Did you reach out to him afterwards? Because it is a sympathetic, it's a warts and all showing. But ultimately, I think you come away from it understanding Maradona's life a little bit more than you did before you saw the film. So do you know what he made of it?
So just going through this conversation between us, we are going through the stages of Maradona. You have the difficult guy to meet. You have the guy that you do meet and it's just you and him and he's all right and he's really nice. And then you make a film and you try and show it to him and you can never get near him again. And it's almost like the deal's done. I've done what I'm going to do. You don't deserve my attention. So I even flew to Buenos Aires. We were literally a few streets away. And, you know, you don't talk to him directly. You go via his people and his agent and his manager. We were not allowed to meet him. So officially, I have always been told he's never seen the film, but it was available in Argentina. It was on TV. He watches football nonstop. It was on the channels that would show all the football. I'm assuming he would know, but he can be a really sweet guy, but he's also one of the most stubborn people ever that have ever existed. So part of him will say, I refuse to watch that film because before I've seen it, I'm sure they betrayed me or something. So as far as I know, he never saw it. We were invited to the World Cup when he was in 2018, he was going to be in Moscow. And he said, oh, yeah, why don't you come over during the World Cup and show it to me? And I just thought, I don't think that's going to be a good time to show you this film. And as we saw, it probably wasn't. So by saying no, perhaps that was my opportunity gone. So I don't know if he's seen it. I've talked to his people around him and no one's ever given me a definitive answer that he did.
What surprised you more? I mean, of all the footage, you know, you must have watched so much deciding what to put in and what not to put in the movie. What was it on the pitch or off the pitch that surprised you most?
I think on the pitch, it's just you just find yourself grinning when you see him do something and you see the way he can manipulate the ball and how he can move and his balance and all of that, you know. But you kind of knew that, and we've seen lots of great players. Off the pitch, I would say the kind of the sweet guy, which, you know, I grew up watching Maradona and reading about him and having an opinion of him or seeing silly videos that people upload on the internet and laughing at him. And then you see the young kid and you go, actually, he's quite sweet. And you see the eyes and the smile and the innocence. And then what I suppose I noticed the most was the fear in his eyes when he's surrounded by people, when they're trying to grab him, when they want a piece of him. And he looks terrified. And I think that you don't see that on the pitch from the camera angles. You don't see that when they're giving interviews. You only see that when they're sort of caught slightly off guard. And I think that vulnerable part of him was the thing that I hadn't seen before. I never thought of Maradona being someone who could be fragile. And I think that's what we all get lost with, you know, these stars, these footballers, they're famous, they're rich, they've got everything, they've got a Ferrari. But we don't really think about the moments when they're a bit lost. Mm. And I think that was the bit that stood out the most.
And I think we saw it in that film, Asif, that, you know, you almost had an understanding of the way his life started to unravel and why he turned to certain substances and other outlets, purely because of the pressure he was under constantly, especially in Naples.
Yeah, Naples is just such an intense city. I mean, you know, Italy is intense and football is really, really important. And we're talking about a time when football was the most important league in the world. And then you go to a very clingy, touchy-feely, very claustrophobic city like Napoli. And then on top of that, he became the god. He became the kind of the kid who put that team on the map, who made them kind of start beating Juventus regularly and win in championships and winning UEFA Cups when it really meant something. So that definitely changed, you know, that changed the way he could exist and the way he lived. And that kind of fandom kind of went, you know, it was amazing when it lasted. It was the best thing ever, but it was also the worst thing for him because it could only go one way. You know, it was always going to become too intense.
I also wonder, by going to Napoli, you know, it was sort of self-flagellation, really. He was under pressure. So if he'd gone somewhere like Milan or Juventus, if you like, a bigger club that had won more, look, he'd still be a huge star, but it possibly wouldn't have been like that. But by going to Naples, piling all that pressure on himself, the same kind of pressure he had whenever he played internationally for Argentina, was quite interesting, wasn't it? Look, I mean, because he loved it. He loved the adulation in one way, and he didn't in others.
The honest truth, Paul, is at the time, nobody came in for him. Mm. He was this great player, but he was deemed a failure at Barcelona.
Yeah.
Okay, he had his ankle broken by Goycochea. He didn't win anything. He argued. He got his final matches, that big punch-up we have at the beginning of the film.
Yeah.
So no one came in for him. And it was a two foreigners rule. Juve had, you know, they had Platini, they had Boniek. Mm. You know, Milan had the Dutch players coming to Milan when it becomes three players. So no one had space for this guy that might not, you know, he might cause a bit of trouble. That's how he was deemed. Napoli needed him. Napoli wanted him. Napoli paid up. So he went to Napoli. It's only when he got to Napoli, he even realised what Napoli was. You know, he had no idea. This is all pre-internet, pre-phones, you know.
Mm.
So he's just like, who paid for me? Him. Okay, I'll go there. He knew nothing about the club. The year before, they nearly got relegated. So you could have had the most expensive player in the world going to a team that was in Serie B.
It's amazing. What do you think his legacy will be, Asif?
I think, honestly, we're realizing it now. You know, before we started the film, and even now, if you look on the comments pages, you have people who love him and people who hate him. And I think that's going to continue. But actually, I don't think there's going to be anyone quite like him. No one will do what he did. No player would go to a team like Napoli now. They're going to go to a team that's won the last eight leagues in that country, and they're going to be surrounded by other megastars. No player will ever win the World Cup the way he won that World Cup. No one will ever do what he did against England in a key World Cup match. You know, I don't think we'll see anyone quite like him. And it's what he did off the pitch. He's the one that, you know, Fidel Castro will want a picture with him. The Pope wants a picture with him. You know, he's the guy that all the rock stars wish they were a bit like him. So you've got this character as well as the best footballer. Now, those two things don't really come together, many people.
Asif, good to talk to you. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks a lot.
Asif Kapadia there, the writer and director of Diego Maradona. So you can watch that. If you haven't seen it, it's an amazing documentary.
Oh,
isn't it?
I mean, it's brilliant. And we said it before, but just the amount he has kicked.
If you're in 86 in that game against England, totally. He gets a real shooing, doesn't he?
But if you are in your 20s now, you just haven't seen attacking players have to deal with
that. No, it was a free-for-all time, wasn't it?
But
you could
it's
kick
amazing.
People as much as you liked in those days. And of course, the pitches, they were talking about this last night, the pitches were terrible. And he was able to work his magic on some pretty terrible surfaces as well.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com.
Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
Yes, it's back. I'm not to say by popular demand, but by popular indifference, it's back. It's day four of Cruyff or Binny, a little throwaway idea on Monday. That has
throwaway, Paul. Come on, don't put yourself down.
The shortest of legs. This is a pretty simple. We take two of the in-focus features that you used to see in your shoot magazine many years ago, and then we compare and contrast. And one of us, we've alternated every day, has to try and guess which of the two players in question said certain things. I'll take you back to Cruyff or Binny. I said, who was a big fan of beef stroganoff? Of course, thinking that it would be the urbane late great Johan Cruyff. That's what Max went with, but it was Mr. Binny.
Yeah, here we go. Welcome to today's episode of Cruyff or Binny. Today's contestant is Paul from North London. Hi, Paul.
Yeah, glad to see you, Max.
You having a
good
day?
I've had a great day. Weather happens now, it's been a great day.
Wonderful.
Everybody's been so nice.
I'm so pleased.
Apart from the producer.
Anyway, today, we're taking it to the next level after sort of Dalglish v Dalglish yesterday.
Yeah.
In today's Cruyff or Binny, a Q&A. I'm not sure it was a focus on. I don't know if that's against the rules, but it's what we're doing. Steve Nicol. Are you aware of Steve Nicol?
Of course I am.
Here we are. League titles, 3 FA Cups, 1 European Cup. You are.
Steve was on this show singing Fleetwood Mac songs
a few weeks ago. Yeah. Well, speaking of singing, he'll be up against, from a Smash Hits Q&A, George Michael. 3 Brit Awards, 4 MTV Music Video Awards, wow. 4 Ivor Novellas, 2 Grammys, over 100 million records
Nicol
worldwide.
Or Michael? This is a development.
It's Nicol or Michael.
We've moved away from football.
Yeah. I mean, if there's any sort of nice, gentle music to just give a bit of...
Something to bubble under?
Yeah, just a bubble under, I think. Okay. Question one.
Just give it a bit of atmos.
Question one for you, Paul.
Okay.
Nicol or Michael, as we play. A sort of administrational question, really. Which one of the two was born on June the 25th, 1963, do you think? Is that Steve Nicol or George Michael?
I'd go Michael.
Okay, correct. It is George Michael. Steve Nicol, 11th of December, 1961. Just a couple of years older. Okay, so here we go. 1 out of 1. Well done.
Good stuff.
Question two. Whose first memory was seeing some goats at a zoo? Is that... have a think about that. Is that Stevie Nicol or is that George Michael?
Goats at a zoo. He's quite quirky, old Steve. And I imagine he was then. So when he did this questionnaire, I'd say Steve Nicol.
It was George Michael, obviously. Unlucky there. Okay, here we go to question three. Yeah. Rattling through. A question of home. Hmm. Who lives in a detached bungalow?
Okay.
Is that Steve Nicol or George Michael? Back in the day.
Back in the day. What sort of era of Michael was this? I mean, this wasn't...
I'm not here to give you details.
Oh, okay. This is quite... I mean, imagine he could have... detached bungalow.
Who's
with
detached
Steve?
Bungalow?
I'll go Nicol.
It is Steve Nicol.
Steve
correct.
Nicol, yeah.
Okay.
This little bungalow in Southport, maybe.
Question
like.
Four. It was in Toxteth, I think. Or Croxteth.
Yeah. I'm not sure. Let's play Toxteth or Croxteth.
That's tomorrow.
Yeah.
Question four, a romance. Hmm. Whose first crush was Mrs. Wilson, a schoolteacher, when I was about 6? Is that George Michael or Steve Nicol?
I'd say that's George Michael.
It is George Michael, yes.
Okay, so I've got three so far.
Three out of four.
Yeah, good
question
work.
Five, a car question. Who at this time is driving a Datsun Sunny? Is that Steve Nicol or George Michael?
But I don't think George Michael with his name on the side and the local Datsun garage that would have supplied it. No, I don't think George would have chosen... Datsun. I'll go Stevie Nicol, club car.
Correct club answer. Car. Okay, yeah, questions are doing very well here, Paul. You're very good at this game. You were excellent at Gibbons or Karl-Heinz Rummenigge. Yeah. You're really good at Nicol or Michael. It's your calling, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it is.
Question six, question of nicknames. Whose nickname was Chopsy? Is that George Michael or Steve Nicol? Chopsy.
That rings a bell.
Rings a bell. Should that help you? I'm wondering... Who do you know more about?
I think it rings a bell that it was Steve. It was Steve Nicol, Chopsy.
Yes. When the team go away, I'm famous for eating a lot of chips. Apparently, I pronounce it Chops.
Chops. Yeah.
Hence the nickname. George Michael's nickname was Yor. His full name was, and I do struggle with these names, Yorgos Kiriakou Panayiotou.
Yeah.
We are. Okay, very good so far. Question
you did quite well, actually.
Thanks so much. Previous jobs. Whose previous jobs included cinema usher and a labourer on a building site? Is that Steve Nicol or George Michael?
Cinema usher and a labourer on a building site. Mm. I imagine Stevie Nicol went more or less straight into football. I don't think he had a life before.
Do you think he did?
George, I think George was on the hod.
Yeah, George Michael also had a Saturday job at British Home Stores. He got sacked for not wearing a shirt and tie, believe it or not.
Was he just a vest?
Quite possibly. You're doing really well here.
Yeah.
6 out of 7. You must be really frustrated about that wrong answer you got earlier. Seeing the goats at the zoo. Might be the one thing that let you down.
There was nothing to work with there.
Whose favourite actor is Shirley MacLaine? George Michael, or is that Steve Nicol?
I don't know. I mean, something tells me it would be George, but being that little bit older, Steve, you know, The Apartment, films like that, you know, I'd go Stevie Nicol.
That's the correct answer.
Ooh, two more to go.
What makes you angry? Who said customs officials?
That's got a bit of George Michael about it.
Yeah, okay.
Is that right?
Yeah, it's the correct answer.
Do you know what Steve? What did Steve say? What annoyed him? Haven't got that to hand. Okay.
Question 10.
Okay, here we go. For 9 out of 10.
For 9 out of 10.
Which would be the absolutely here we go. Smashing it.
Liam Ridgewell's been in touch to say, I'm not sure if these games are getting worse, but I love them. Thank you very much, Liam. as sponsored by Liam Ridgewell.
That's brilliant.
Portland Timbers hero.
Indeed.
Okay, question 10. For 9 out of 10, a tricky one. Who said no, not really, to the question, do you miss being in Wham? Is it?
It's a tricky one.
Steve Nicol or is that George Michael?
You heard Steve singing Don't Stop by Fleetwood Mac, so you know the answer. He was first approached. Andrew Ridgely first went to him, said, Steve, are you prepared to be in Wham? So I'm going Stevie Nicol.
No, it was actually George Michael.
No.
8 out of 10 there, Paul. But wow. Thanks for playing, and I hope you had a good time.
I did. I've had a great day. And what am I? 8 out of 10. I don't get the 10, so I leave empty-handed.
You do leave empty-handed.
Don't I get the Cruyff or Binny? What would he have? There'd be some sort of a carriage clock or something?
It would have to turn. Maybe it's... what's Binny's first name? I forget.
Fred, wasn't it?
Is it Fred Binny doing a Cruyff turn in a kind of mannequin form?
That's beautiful. Yeah. Okay, we'll get one of those made up, as this is likely to carry on going for years.
Think you and Andy will do that?
I think Andy
will be really into it.
What is this rubbish? Was it Max's idea?
I remember.
And at which point I say, yes, Andy, it was. It was nothing to do with me. I was quite reluctant.
I did a week with Andy, and I used to like bringing in, you know, sort of pick-me-up magazine or something, and just ask a daft survey. And one morning we came in, and Andy just came in the office going, no more surveys!
Fantastic. Well, surprisingly, it wasn't Steve Nicol that was in Wham, but George Michael. And it's surprising when you hear Steve sing as he did for us. We'll take you into the travel and we'll return talking a bit of Europa League football tonight. But first, Stevie Nicol sings the work of Stevie Nicks, effectively.
Don't stop thinking about tomorrow, don't stop, it'll soon begin. It'll begin better than before. Yesterday's gone.
Ooh. The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
Little story we've not got round to this week. I don't know if you saw this at the weekend. Dean Smith was talking about Ollie Watkins, who have kind of played under him at Brentford. And he was telling the story of how he used to kind of keep an eye on some of his players. He said, I would go and spy on them now and again, see where they were living without them knowing. So I'd often sort of turn up and take a little present with me. So there was a reason for him going there.
Okay.
And we've seen Jose giving out 500 quid's worth of Birrico ham to Sergio Reguilon, but not for Dean. He turned up with a fish tank for Ollie Watkins.
Huh.
The idea that a manager turns up on your doorstep and stand there holding a fish tank.
A fish tank's the sort of thing you have to accept it as the gaffer.
Yeah.
You don't really want it.
Well,
you have to clean it every week. Is Dean going to offer that someone to come around and clean it every week?
Well, it does bring with it. It was a moving in present. Right. And Ollie was quite taken with it. But then, of course, he realised that, you know, you have to look after fish. And yes, unfortunately, this is it gets a bit tragic at this point.
Oh, no.
Ollie overfed them.
I have done that recently.
And they all died. He basically he misread, and it's a salutary lesson to us all, really. Do read the instructions. Mm. It said feed them once every 2 days, but he was feeding them twice a day.
Oh,
so they went down the... Yeah.
Yes, we got the fish from school during lockdown. And actually, I had, I would say, the most terrifying drive of my life. I had to go... So my wife is a teacher.
Yeah. Point you haven't got any kids. No. Just a random school turned up. Yeah. Dean Smith just turns up on your doorstep.
So what can
this
I do?
This is from the local comp. Look after these.
So anyway, my wife works at school, so we got the goldfish for lockdown. And trying to drive, quite, you notice where the potholes are on Commercial
Street.
When you've
got a goldfish there,
when you've got a goldfish sitting there, it was absolutely terrifying. And I did overfeed them for a couple of days. You have to give them peas. Helps their digestion. You have to skin some peas, yeah, and defrost them.
See, that's what Ollie Watkins didn't have
Ollie
time
didn't
to
do
that.
But you see, that what's interesting is there are a couple of guys. Ross Barkley at Villa is much more knowledgeable with keeping fish. Trezeguet as well.
Yeah.
And Tyrone Mings has an aquarium.
Has he really?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, he's got, it's one that you can swim in.
Yeah.
That'd be great. He gets in with the fish.
Tyrone Mings gets in the fool's aqua gear.
That'll be great.
And he goes
swims,
around and he's got a little brush to clean all the little rocks as well.
Wow, do you know what?
I didn't know that.
That's brilliant. That's great news.
Do you want to know who the best cricketer is at Tottenham Hotspur? Obviously, we saw that amazing catch from Dele Alli yesterday.
Yeah.
It is Joe Hart, by all accounts. They've been tweeting some more videos. It's interesting when you're top of the league, isn't it? Suddenly, you're top of the league for like 5 minutes, and now it's like your social media can just have so much fun. It's a fun place to be. You can't
imagine
this.
You can.
Exactly.
But Ricky
right.
Clark, who's a big Spurs fan, Surrey player, he was quite impressed with the cricket he saw on offer on the old Spurs social media. He thought it was a brilliant catch by Dele Alli.
That was a marvellous catch. Joe Hart, apparently. Ben Stokes has got in touch as well, so it's been a real social media success there for Tottenham Hotspur. Let's see.
At a time when the boy needs it, just what he needs, really, to be talked up all of his cricketing skills, isn't it? Just what he really needs.
Well, you know, let's see if he, let's hope he doesn't just, you know, spill a dolly against Ludo Goretz tonight. That'll be just the answer.
Exactly.
Yeah. I've got lots of vignettes here, Paul, which I don't think you'll be impressed with them at all. How many rats do you think there are in the UK?
Wow, okay. Top of my head.
Top of your head. What do you reckon?
400 million.
150 million. The closure of pubs and restaurants has helped Britain.
I was looking at the James Herbert version of how many rats there were. That's one for the teenagers.
In fact,
he wrote a book called The Rats.
Yeah, okay. Well, I mean, it was a reference I laughed along with but didn't quite understand.
Okay,
it's
a bit
like the Martin Kellner section.
They're very popular. They're very popular in the 70s and 80s, the James Herbert kind of horror books. He'd take like a different animal and then they would proliferate and then they take over the world and they'd eat people, you know, like Gerbil was one of his. Slug.
Dark.
No, it wasn't really. But The Rats was very good, actually, a very good book.
2.2 rodents for every person.
Yeah.
There we are. So that's how many rats there are. I haven't brought it back to sport. Vasily Rats, of course, is one of
Vasily
them.
Rats is not staying here at the moment, is he,
in the
UK?
There are 149 million.
Glenn Rodent, he's not staying here at the same time.
149,999,999 rats and Vasily Rats in the UK.
Yeah, okay.
Do you have any more?
No, I haven't.
Okay, I've got plenty.
I've just
it's one and
pick
one.
Pick another one from your pile of scrappy paper there.
No fans in stadia, obviously. So Cardiff's Principality Stadium are planning a skywalk to the top a zip wire has been approved by councillors. So you can get 2,000 and... Could you get 2,001 fans into the Principality Stadium for their next rugby match? Because one person could be on the top.
A zip wire is good. Because I went along to the skywalk, Tottenham's skywalk, which is great. And you go up on the roof
and you walk around
the front
and
stand up on the old... on the old Park Lane, which was great. But they've got a way to abseil down the Park Lane, into the car park. I was basically miming abseiling then, like great radio. But
the international sign for abseiling.
Abseiling, I went below the line of the desk quite rapidly.
It's very close to the international sign for bell ringing, but it's just a slightly different,
it is.
A different
and
hole,
punting,
isn't it?
Which I believe you did back in the day.
Yeah, very successfully.
Yeah.
So you abseiled down the Tottenham Hotspur?
I didn't do it. No, I didn't abseil. They're offering that later. But I think the idea of a way to just to sort of fly into the stadium from one stand to another on a zip wire, I'd be much up for that. Yeah. It sounds fantastic.
How much would you pay for a fossilised Triceratops horn?
Well, on the open market, what you're paying at the moment?
What you're paying, what do you reckon?
Is it an aphrodisiac, or I think it
doesn't do anything for you.
No,
you know, I mean, it sounds in a George Galloway sense, it wouldn't take you to the places he mentioned yesterday.
You got to pay close on £500,000 for that.
11 grand.
11 grand for a fossilized... now extinct animal's horn.
Absolutely,
but
you right.
can't just. They don't grow on trees. I mean, 11 grand for something you can't get in very few places.
I mean, it's a very small amount of money. Do footballers go for 11 grand anymore? What's the last footballer who went for 11 grand? It's also an insult. You're better off being a free transfer.
That's a very good question.
Who's the last 11 grand footballer?
Well, funny enough, it brings us back to Diego Maradona, because when he played in Aussie's testimonial, there was a lot of stories saying, oh, he's coming to us. Aussie's got into him, and he's leaving Napoli, and he's only been there, it's not working. He's coming to Spurs. And we were all very excited, this idea that it was going to be him and Glenn Hoddle working their magic together.
It's so good. But
they said then, a club record of £10 million, it was going to cost £10 million.
There would be phone-ins on TalkSport back in the day. You can't play them in a two,
yeah.
Can you?
Can they play together?
Can you get
8717?
Can we get Vinny Samways? You've got to drop Maradona and bring in Steve Sedgley. I've got my years right, have I?
Putting some noses out of joint, that would have been in that era, certainly. So they got Steve Hodge after that instead. And then, of course, Steve then swapped shirts with Maradona and took some stick. Maybe Gary will tell us that. Steve Hodge was saying today he got pelters back in the dressing room after an And of God game. He just saw Maradona and he said, swap shirts, not tugged his shirt, didn't speak any Spanish, but it's a universal language for footballers as they leave the field.
Yeah.
Tug shirts. So he took it off and he got the shirt, and apparently Terry Fenwick, one of the boys, said, what you got his shirt for? He's just stiffed us.
But tomorrow in the Daily Mail, Peter Shilton, I still hate Steve Hodge for that moment.
But apparently Peter Reid was saying afterwards, and now it's worth a few quid now, so who got it right
exactly.
And who got it wrong?
Exactly. Yeah.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
Maradona. Going at them again. Brilliant run by Maradona. Fantastic goal. Unbelievable. World class in the best sense of the phrase.
Here's Maradona again. He has Burchaga to his left and Valdano to his left. He won't need any of them. Oh, you have to say that's magnificent. There is no debate about that goal. That was just pure football genius.
That was Motti giving us the Belgium goal, wasn't it? That image, I'm talking about the mind's eye. You can see that run. And that still as well of all those Belgian players all lined up in front of him. It's
a great picture.
Like a chessboard. A dagger to the heart, that second clip from Barry there for our next guest. A man that played against Diego Maradona, played with him, something we'll come on to. And, of course, about 20 years after the Hand of God game, went out with the Beeb to interview him. Gary Lineker joins us. Good afternoon, Gary.
Good afternoon, chaps.
Good to talk to you as always. That's pretty unique, really. The story of how you played with him, I thought, was fascinating. And we love the fact that in 1987, it was the Mercantile Credit International, one of our listeners has filled us in on it. He was at the game and he said that it's great that Maradona would think, oh, yeah, I'll go back to England a year after the Hand of God. Sure, it'll all be fine.
Yeah, it's really spooky because what happened yesterday, I was reminded of that game as I told the story. I've told this story a few times in the past, but about when I played with him in that game and how everyone was in awe of him. I got home last night and I saw another clip that I did in a documentary, as you mentioned, when I went out to interview him. I was with him for 3 days and he gave me a shirt signed. And I thought, I wonder if I can find that shirt. And I was hunting around for it and I pulled out this T-shirt that I thought was it, but it wasn't. And this medal flicked up from nowhere and landed on the floor. And I picked it up and it's got Mercantile Credit, 1967. I mean, honestly, it was like the spookiest thing.
Wow. And
this was like after I got home from doing the Champions League BT coverage last night. So it's about midnight. What's going on? This is really weird. I didn't even know I had that medal.
Wow. I think it's amazing. When you talked about Maradona coming on and just sort of booting it up in the air and then doing it again and again, and seeing you and Michael Owen, players, to be fair, you were pretty good, Gary. And the idea that, it was a different game for him just gives us an idea of just quite how brilliant he was.
Absolutely right. Even people that were significantly better than me, like Michel Platini, who played in that game, and it was Preben Elkjær and one or two others, really top players, and all of us were totally in awe of him because he was quite literally on another level than us. And it doesn't make you feel bad about, I think, yourself. It excites you to see someone that's that good. And I get it now when I watch Messi in a similar way, does things that ordinary mortals just can't do. And he could do that frequently. And he had such a presence and an aura. And I think it was probably added to by the flaws of his off-the-field life. But he really was both a remarkable footballer. And when you consider his background, where he come from, his stature, he's only about 5'4", tiny, but very powerful. But the touch and the things he could do with the football, he just, you know, there's that old phrase about being on first name terms. But he was way beyond that. He was just something really, really special.
We spoke to Asif Kapadia earlier on, Gary, about his documentary and what it was like for Diego day to day. I mean, you're a well-known face. People often stop you in the street and want selfies and autographs, etc. But in that 3 days that you spent with him, did you get a bit of a window on what it was like being Diego Maradona?
I did indeed. It was truly extraordinary. I mean, he's so revered there and treated almost like the Messiah. and I kid you not, there's no exaggeration. Everywhere you went, there were hordes of people, some with him, some people just like spotting him and running over and screaming and shouting. And it was like that all the time. Everywhere I went to a five-a-side game that he played in with him. I went to a football match to watch Boca Juniors, and he's got his little box there. It's funny, I just saw on social media this afternoon the stadium there, Bolsonaro, was in complete darkness, except they left on the lights in Diego's little box that he watches the matches from. And to experience that with him in that box got a bit nostalgic, but his life is like no others. And you can understand why things went a little bit pear-shaped in many aspects. And he's obviously had addiction problems and stuff. But I think what he's given the game and what he's given football fans, particularly obviously in Argentina, around the world, I think it way eclipses is the downsides.
I mean, obviously, you probably weren't feeling great in the dressing room, and I'm sure you've told this a million times in 86 after that game, but I wonder now if you feel sort of honoured to have been on the pitch when he scored that goal.
Well, I told the story yesterday that it was so good on a playing surface that was so poor. To do what he did was truly extraordinary, and it was the only time in my career where I genuinely felt like I ought to put my hands together and applaud that goal. You can't do that. And part of me was also gutted. But it was definitely the best thing I've ever seen on a football pitch. And I think it's the best goal that's ever been scored, personally. I mean, there's others, you know, you see great goals, don't you, every now and again. I've seen Messi score very similar to that. But it was in a La Liga game, not in the quarterfinal of a World Cup against England. On a dodgy pitch. And so I think it's the greatest goal that's ever scored. But some of the things he could do were truly breathtaking. It was almost like he'd been, you know, planted down from some other planet. And rather like Messi, I always think those two in particular, they played the game almost as though it was an out-of-body experience where they were looking at themselves from above. So they had so much vision and knew what to do at exactly any given moment. And I've never really seen that in anybody else but those two.
The turn that gets him on the way for that run towards the goal. I mean, you were saying that the pitch itself wasn't great. I mean, pitches generally weren't great. And that's the other thing about him. He had those touches. He had that sublime skill even on terrible pitches. And that pitch he played on in Mexico wasn't great. So he had no right really for it to be glued to his foot for that long.
No, it was amazing because it was actually like lots of square pieces of turf. I think they'd had a problem with it and relayed it, like you would your back garden. I kid you not. And you kind of put your foot on it and the thing would move away. So how he did what he did, and then kept it going and beat player after player, was incredible. And also, the conditions, it's hot, it was humid, playing at altitude. So, you know, nothing. I mean, and following that great goal, if you watch the semi-final against Belgium, he scores one that's not quite as good, but it's not far off to follow it through. But he was a great talent. We were born a month apart. Our lives have coincided on many times, many occasions. Obviously, we're very different. He's significantly better footballer than I was, but. I always liked him. I always liked him as a guy. I know that he punched one in against us, and you know that he got away with that. But even that, he was cheeky about it, and I had conversations with him. He had a lovely sense of humour. Funny enough, I did the World Cup draw the last time I saw him. Actually, I did the World Cup draw with him in Moscow in the Kremlin, and we went through the draw and I had a little kind of joke of his expense about when he picked the balls out and said he's quite good with his hand or something like that. And he thought it was really funny. And then it was quite a complex presentation, that thing. And at the end of it, he came up to me and he said, Gary, that was amazing. You did a fantastic job. I said, oh, thanks, Diego. I mean, it means a lot coming from me. He said, you know, Gary, he was doing this in Spanish, obviously. And he said, you know, Gary, as a footballer, he said, you were okay. You were okay. And he said, but, you know, as a presenter, as doing this, he said, if you were as good at football as you are at presenting, he said, you might have been nearly as good as me.
There's a compliment in there somewhere, isn't there?
I didn't know whether to take or the opposite.
How long, you know, after the game, you know, because so much is talked about, you know, the handball and do we forgive him, don't we forgive him? And, you know, how long after did you go, well, it's part of the game, you know, he got kicked a lot, there are other ways of cheating. Did it take you any amount of time?
No time at all. I mean, I know some of my teammates are still bitter to this day, and I get that. But, you know, you want to win, you try and win. We see it now, you know, players buy free kicks, players buy penalties. You know, there's the big dives, there's handball. You know, Thierry Henry did a handball, didn't he, that the Irish probably never forgiven him for. You know, these things happen, they got away with it. If it had been me that, like, punched it in, although can't imagine the circumstances where that would happen. But if it was me that had done it, would this country still be whining about that? I don't know. I don't know. It was, but for me, he got away with it. I still blame the linesman. I think the linesman saw it. In fact, he latterly admitted he thought he did, but didn't have the nerve to put his flag up. So, I forgive him a long time ago. I like him. He's a good guy, and he's a wonderful footballer, and he was always warm and very open to people.
I think from that film as well, and you know this from the time you played, like the amount you and he got kicked, it's so different. You know, the Messi Maradona comparison is made so much, but like Maradona, you guys were getting absolutely hammered.
Yeah, it was a different game. You needed to commit actual bodily harm before you got a yellow card back then. And if you remember 82, he was kicked terribly, particularly against Italy, wasn't it?
Yeah. And
I think he eventually responded and he got a red card in one of the games. And then 86, but he was so strong and he was actually difficult to kick. I think as well, you know, because he was so stocky and strong. But yeah, the game's changed and the playing surface is so much better now. Playing football, the balls are better, the equipment's better, the boots are better. Everything makes it much better. You can't kick people anymore. You know, a lot of offside rules, loads of changes for the better, in my opinion, of the game and for forwards and people like Messi. It's futile comparing the two of them in terms of saying which one's better, because there are extraordinary similarities in many ways, certainly on the pitch, complete opposites off the pitch. But on the pitch, you know, the left foots are both magical. Both could beat people easier, both great passes, both very small, both Argentinian. And they're both so gifted. Comparing one to the other is so difficult because the game has changed and it's a different game now. But the one thing is sure is that Messi would have been great in Maradona's day and Maradona would be great in Messi's day. Yeah. There's no question about that.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
So there we are. That was this afternoon's show. Thank you very much, Max. It's good to see you.
Pleasure. Yeah, anytime. Yeah, yeah.
So we'll catch up with you tomorrow. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast. Hear the guys every weekday between 1 and 4 p.m. on TalkSport.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's Amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.